Hello and welcome to History on the Dark Side. Today is one of those days that is actually a couple years in the making, very early in the broadcast career here. I had this thought that you know what would make my show even better? If I had my eldest son on to co-host, because he's more talented than me. So after a lot of technical trying to get a hold of him because he lives clear across the country, we finally figured out a schedule and a time and the technology to try and make this happen. So today my special guest host is my kid, Jacob Andrus. What's up, Jacob?
Hey, Dad. Thanks for having me.
I mean, I assume you should probably thank Mom for that. My part was just like 90 seconds, but Mom had to do like some hours of labor or something. I forget exactly how that went. Anyway, I might have to change the rating on the show to PG-13. Things get a little out of hand sometimes when I'm with you, Jake.
That's all right. We're used to that.
So while we're talking about things that are fun and enjoyable and humorous, of course, let's talk about Nazi medicine, because that's none of those things.
Well, you know how I feel about Nazi medicine.
I really don't. Let's hear it. How do you feel about Nazi medicine?
Well, I've always wanted to go and see the doctors, so let's hear about it.
All right. Have you listened to any of the other podcasts in this series?
This is season two.
Yeah.
I listened to the first episode in season one, but I haven't listened to any in season two.
Okay. So some of the stuff we've covered, this whole confluence in Nazi Germany of taking that idea of the Hippocratic Oath and, you know, do no harm, and changing that from the individual patient in front of you to screw that, the patient is Germany and the German people as a whole. And then that's going to match up delightfully in the worst possible way with German efficiency and engineering and this desire to industrialize things. And they're really good at it. Like, I mean, sometimes stereotypes are, you know, based in a little bit of truth. And at this given time, even today, you know, Germany is pretty well known as an industrial society. You know, they make nice cars and motorcycles, and they're known for building things. Engineering's kind of a big deal over there.
Uh-huh.
So what could possibly go wrong when you decide that it's okay to murder people or and you've decided to do it in the most efficient way possible? What could possibly go wrong?
Well, I feel like you get a lot of stuff done. That's probably
right? Like if, I don't know. I was going to make a joke and it was going to go horribly awry. So rather than get phone calls from concerned leagues of listeners, I'm just going to leave that one alone. So we've talked about some of the steps along this way. And we're going to talk about Joseph Mengele today, our dear friend, the Angel of Death in Auschwitz. And he's really a bigger, kind of mythical, iconic part of the Holocaust afterwards than maybe he even was before. Because he's like, symbolically, what can happen when the absolute peak of those two things we talked about, changing medicine and being efficient, come together. What's the one example you can have that's the worst of both worlds? Hey, we're there. We found a guy.
Yeah.
And I think he's probably super more known and mythologized because dude got away too. Like, while we're catching Nazis at the end of the war, or the Russians are sending people to gulags, or the Israelis are kidnapping people and putting them on trial in the 60s, this dude's not getting caught at all. And one of the craziest things is what we'll talk about today, his kind of life before the Holocaust and his life after, because there's a noted difference in how he goes about his daily activities when he's there at Auschwitz.
Uh-huh.
So let's start with, what do you even know about Dr. Mengele? Most people know some little bits of stuff because he's pretty much a fixture of popular culture. But what do you know?
Pretty much the only things that I do know are that he was, you know, a doctor in Auschwitz.
Okay.
And so he had something to do with experimenting on twins. That's the only thing I know about.
Okay, good, good. I would say his experimenting on twins is what he's most well known for.
Okay.
So that makes sense. So
cool. I'm in the large majority. All
I think so. I think so. You know, there's a lot of other little bits and pieces that people often say that are not necessarily true. I don't want to add to that. So I'll try and talk about what we can definitely show historically to be accurate. If I don't mention in this podcast some of the other stuff he's maybe known for, that could be because we don't have time. That could be because maybe it's questionable whether that was an actual thing. Okay. So there you go. If you find I have erred, dear listeners, then just, you know, get on the old email, send me your hate mail, and I'll apologize profusely later. Yay. So we've got our dude who's really well known for experimenting on twins in the biggest death factory. And I think it's fair to call Auschwitz a death factory. That's really what it was. That the world's ever seen. Super efficient. So that's great. But he starts out life kind of not as that, right? Like, if you're going to go, huh, what would be the early life of super death factory crazy doctor guy, mad scientist? Go. What would you think his early life or his growing up or his... what do you think it might be?
What I would like to think is he was probably an orphan.
Okay.
And had a really tough time in the system. And then some really bad guy came along and saw he had potential and was like, here, come work in this factory I got going.
Right.
But okay. In actuality, I can't imagine that's how it went at all.
Well, yes. That's not entirely how it went at all. There's a lot of... I was listening to a bunch of podcasts to get ready for this podcast, right? And I find it frustrating. Mostly, I like to go to the original source material, whether that's, you know, scans of stuff online or books. Like, the biggest book I've used for this is The Nazi Doctors by Robert J. Lifton. That is absolutely the Bible on this subject.
Okay.
And there are some others that are good as well, and some other authors. And maybe if I... should add an addendum to the end with some of those suggested materials. They're not right here in front of me. But it's super interesting to think on these podcasts, he gets lumped into like with serial killers. And there's this incredibly huge difference between Dr. Mengele and say Ted Bundy or, you know, the BTK killer. There's almost no similarities there in this background area. So if I were to talk to you about, hey, if there's somebody who is a serial killer, what are some of the markers you might look for? I mean, there's some commonly identified things that if kids do, oh no, they might grow up to be a serial killer. What do you know about those? What do you got?
It's like if they abuse animals,
yep.
If they like continually have problems wetting the bed,
yep.
Like even being after potty trained, those are the two big ones that I've always known.
Fires, if they start fires, that's another pretty common one.
Oh, yeah. That is a pretty good one.
A general lack of empathy and inability to communicate with people. So, yeah, all of those things are... And then a lot of times, though not always, there's some element of somebody being overbearing or somebody being abusive or somebody being neglectful. And you put all that into a nice soup and there's a chance... you end up with a serial killer. Obviously, not everyone does, or there'd be a lot more of them walking the earth.
Oh, yeah.
I'm glad there's not. There's enough troubles in this world. So Dr. Mengele grows up in a pretty good situation. Now, I've got to admit, none of the literature talks much about how well he did wetting the bed, right? Like, so I don't know. I don't think that's a thing, but maybe it was. You know, why would you talk about it, right? So we don't see anything there. No kind of history of being destructive, hurtful, mean, killing animals, none of that. Mm-hmm. He's got kind of a, not a overbearing maybe, or maybe a little bit overbearing, but not abusive kind of situation with mom at home. Mom's very Catholic.
Okay.
And so they're raised very Catholic. So, you know, what's different if you are raised in a religion like Catholicism, as opposed, where you're active, as opposed to if you're just somebody who's not that level of religious? What are your thoughts?
I think the biggest difference there is the fact that people who are typically raised and active in any kind of religion are that they kind of have their own relationship with God, whatever God that is they believe in. And so they feel a sense of responsibility for their actions and the things that they do. Whereas people who don't grow up in any kind of religion, it's more abstract. They think of like, what are morals? What are values? Who puts all this stuff in place? And they may or may not believe in any deity, but they don't have that, they don't feel as responsible towards those actions.
Okay. Another big difference I would suggest, like if you talk about growing up in an active religion like Catholicism, where you're going to mass however many times a week and you have all these rites and you're going to kneel and you've got sacraments and like you grew up LDS, so that's a very active religion. There's a lot of stuff and meetings and you have to do this and eat that and don't do that, don't wear this. If you grew up Jewish or Seventh-day Adventist, or if you're a Mennonite or Amish, something like that, this is a lot more of doing things than the typical evangelical Christian kind of religion that is very common, at least in America today, you know?
Yeah.
And so you have all these have-to-dos or have-to-avoid kind of situations. There's, I don't know, part of the morality within really life-encompassing religions sometimes is that it just, well, you've got all these boxes. Well, I have to do this, I have to regimentally do these things, and I have to regimentally avoid these other things. That's different than people who are not actively in their religion, you know?
Yeah.
Like, even if there's, you know, if he grows up next door to another Catholic family, and there's a lot of Catholic people in the greater German area, a lot of Lutherans too, which has some similarities in theology, but quite a bit different in these rites and sacraments and the things you do. If you're really active, it's more than just what you believe. It's more than that moral code. You get kind of your life choices are somehow dictated by, I do these things, I don't do these things. It's a different way of growing up, maybe, than your neighbor who, even if they're of the same religion, don't practice it the same way. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we've got our dear friend, Dr. Mengele. He's not a doctor yet. It turns out most people are not born doctors.
Huh.
When I was a kid, we had a TV show. What'd you say?
Even Asians?
Oh, man. I don't think we can make a show about the Holocaust and dip into too many racial stereotypes or jokes, or it's not that funny, you know? So
that's probably
be careful there, kid. When I was a kid, we had a show, Doogie Howser, MD, about a 16-year-old who was a doctor because he was just some kind of medical savant, you know? But that's not what we're dealing with. By all accounts, Mengele, his family's well off. They've got money. That's going to matter his whole life. In any kind of Western society, and frankly, in most any society, what does it matter if you have more money than the average bear?
I mean, money kind of makes a big difference.
How so?
Well, if you're growing up poor, then you're always, a lot of the times growing up poor, you're just looking to try and get by. You're trying to find out, how am I going to survive? Whereas anybody who's growing up well off, then it kind of opens up a lot more freedom for them to pursue whatever kind of interest they have or really anything else.
Yeah.
I mean, We were poor a lot growing up.
A lot? Like all the time.
And so there were a lot of times as a kid where just like something would come up with friends and I would just be like, yeah, no, I'm not going to be able to do that. Like and it didn't faze me at all. I just knew that like, hey, we don't got money for that. Like we're poor right now. So, and there were times growing up when like we had money as compared to other years and there was a noticeable difference for me.
Yeah, those times were called the first and the 15th. You don't know this out in the real world, but when I got paid for the next like day or two, we forgot we were poor and we did some living. So there was a good 48, maybe 72 hours a month. It was on. We'd do some things.
Good times.
Right? Making those memories. Well, like you talked about, you can do some things. You can pursue some things. Some interesting things about Mengele is that he's going to pursue his studies. Okay, he's not like a super scholar, 4.3, top of his class, Robert E. Lee dominating his field kind of a guy. But he is very successful and driven, and he likes to be perceived as successful. How he is perceived very early on matters to him a lot.
Okay, so he's got kind of an ego already.
Yeah, and it doesn't seem like it's that kind of ego where you think you're the crap, but maybe psychologically it's more of that ego where you want and you need that reinforcement to feel like, am I the crap? I want to be the crap. I don't know if I'm it. So he's kind of doing those things to try and get that recognition.
Okay.
I don't think he really demonstrated at any point that he just knew he was the stuff and acted that way. But maybe a little bit when we get to the camps. He's very charismatic, okay? And when I think of that, I always think of you, of all my kids. And Katie would be mad if we had this talk, right? She'll hear this episode and be like, bull crap. I know I'm better at this than Jacob, but she's not, okay? I love my little princess girl. But Jake, you have the most kind of natural charisma. You walk into a room of people you don't know and just start chopping it up and talking and people like you and you can kind of talk about anything. And an hour later, everybody's like, oh, that Jacob guy is pretty cool.
I learned a lot from you and Mom.
Okay, you learned none of that from me because I have to work at that all the time. Mom, yeah. Yeah, she was definitely that person. So good for you for getting that from her. Bad news, Amaron. You got my temper. Anyway, so so he's got that skill. Now, in your life, having that kind of charismatic ability, how does that benefit your life?
And now, a special word from our sponsors.
Hey, Bubba, what you doing over there? Well, I was fixing to go do some chores or something, but man, I just ain't got no kind of energy. Yeah, I know what you mean. I've been thinking about, you know, doing some running or something to try and lose some weight. It's starting to be a problem. Yeah, I reckon I need to stop smoking too. You know, it's so bad right now, even Cousin Lulu won't go out with me. It's just like doggone hard to have to deal with all these things at once. It's too bad there ain't no way to deal with them all at the same time.
Well, maybe there is.
Who the heck is you?
Well, I'm Dr. Spencer Preston from Science.
Ray Ray, I ain't fixing to listen to no dang Yankee doctor.
Well, what if I told you that I represented the same company that created Chicken and Beer Bubblegum?
Chicken and Beer Bubblegum? I tell you what, that there changed my life. We better listen to him, Bubba.
Have you two ever heard of popcorn lung?
Popcorn lung? I ain't never heard that. I heard of pickled pig's feet, though.
You know, it's a condition that people get from a vape.
A vape?
Yeah, an electronic cigarette.
Electronic cigarettes? Whoa, Ray Ray, he really is from science.
When vaping first started, it was used as a way for people to get away from all the tar, tobacco, and chemicals, and keep all the high that you get from smoking a cigarette.
I mean, that sounds pretty good.
But then some people started developing a condition called popcorn lung, where their lungs wasn't working right, and they had trouble breathing, and sometimes they even needed a transplant.
Well, that don't sound no dang good at all.
It wasn't until now. Due to science, we can turn that popcorn into caramel corn, candy corn, or hot butter goodness.
Well, woo-wee, that sounds good.
Introducing Corn Puffs, the only vape mod around that's able to make your popcorn lung popcorn done. It'll get you more energy because nicotine's a natural stimulant. And it'll help you lose weight because it's also an appetite suppressant. And it'll help you quit smoking because, well, that's what the dang thing's for.
I tell you what, Ray Ray, I'm fixing to call Cousin Lulu and see if I can ask her to go to the prom. Bubba, you know she like 22 years old, don't you? Yeah, I reckon I better get that date before she done graduate. She might make it any year now.
Hello?
Hey there, Miss Lulu. Guess what? Today, your lucky day. And now back to the dark side.
You, personally, what do you got?
I mean, it's always been helpful for me, especially when I'm like, it's always something that I have to think about. I don't walk into any room initially and can start chopping it up. I have to make the decision in my own mind. Okay, yeah, I'm going to go in and start talking to these people, and it's going to be great. But it really is as simple as that. Once I have that one thought, I got it. I'm on board.
Okay.
It's really, really helpful for any time that I need, like, I know that I need to network and I need to meet with people. Like, I'm here, there's these other people here, and I need to talk to them so that way I can do something for work, or when I was in Boy Scouts and I could do stuff for my Eagle project. It was really, really helpful to just be able to walk in and be like, all right, cool, I'm getting what I need. All I need to do is make you smile within, like, the first minute of me talking to you. And at the end of the night, I'm going to get whatever favor I need from you.
Okay.
So that's pretty helpful.
Exactly. And, you know, you've probably, I know that any job you've ever had that you wanted to, you end up in some kind of leadership position.
Yeah, pretty much.
And it's not that you're like some, you know, iron-willed dictator who can just force people to doing what he wants. People just genuinely kind of like you, and they naturally kind of follow you. I mean, looking at you from a sociological standpoint, you're a natural leader, often an informal leader, and you can turn that, especially in the workplace. That makes up for a lot of times degrees or experience or connections. Like, you can just be you and make up for not having that same level of those other things that somebody else has.
Yeah, a lot of the times for my particular experience, it specifically makes up for not having a plan.
Okay, good. That's good. All right. So,
But if I got everybody on good terms and if we're all working together, then it doesn't really matter what the plan is. We'll just throw something together as we go and it works out.
Okay. So, I think in dealing with other people, the way you are with how we've talked about is similar to how it seems Mengele was. He has this ability. He really likes to talk to people. As a teenager, he starts wearing tailored clothes, and he wants everything to be neat and pristine and ironed and look his best. And that's part of this desire to be set apart. Not because he already thinks he's better than people, but so that he gets held in some different esteem. Look, this guy looks really sharp. He must have his stuff together.
He's dressing for the job that he wants.
Yes. Perfect. Perfect. I didn't tell you this before, but you can also plug products on this podcast just willy-nilly. Because, you know, I'm not making any money on it. So I just invent commercials for whoever I want. And right now, I want to take a little 30-second break to tell you about Rockstar Orange Whipped Boom. The whipped orange boom is amazing. And we recently went on vacation to California, and I couldn't find this freaking rock star anywhere. What is your problem, California? Quit burning down as a state. Buy some freaking orange rock star whip. Boom. Problem solved. Jeez. Anyways, I've been a little bit addicted to these since I came back. They're delightful. There you go.
Nice.
Feel free, Rockstar, to send me a check. It turns out when you have 14 listeners, you don't get a check from Rockstar.
Hey, start at 14, end with 14 million.
Oh, I'm maybe 16. Not million, just 16.
Way, as soon as we know what number Rockstar gives the check, the followers will follow.
Right, right. That's the key link there. All right, so he dresses nice. He gets along well with others. He's competent in all of his studies, and he's driven. He wants to be good at what he wants to be. We know some of this to be true because when he gets done with his schooling, you know, he makes it into college, which isn't a gimme, right? Like, our boy Hitler wanted to get into the Art Institute, but his art wasn't good enough. Ha ha, take that, evil dictator instead of painter, and the world suffered for that. But Mengele is able to get into school. He doesn't just major in, you know, medicine. He's not just into that science end. When he graduates, he has a doctorate, basically, in medicine. But he has this additional certification. So rather than just doing the regular program a regular doctor would have to go through to be a practicing, like, physician, he's got this extra endorsement so he can come out of there and also teach other, you know, in an academic setting, in a college setting, or he could run a lab or have his own research.
He's like a double doctor, like a doctor and a doctor professor.
Yes, and he also gets what's basically a doctorate in anthropology.
Oh, man.
So, I mean, even if you're not getting straight A's, right? Because C's get degrees, kids. C's get degrees.
That's true.
You still got to do some amount of work, and he's tackling a lot of stuff. It's almost like he's got the triple threat going here, right?
That is true.
Now, wasn't there like 10 minutes when you were at the end of your high school career where you wanted to maybe go into anthropology? Wasn't that a thing? Or was yours archaeology?
No, I loved the idea of anthropology. I saw Stargate SG-1, and I was like, hey, Mom, what's that guy do?
Right?
He goes to, like, Egypt and studies aliens and stuff. And she's like, he's an anthropologist. And I was like, that's what I'm going to do.
Okay, there you go.
I didn't get into college.
Well, you know why you didn't get into college, right? Like, this is...
Because I didn't apply?
Yeah, there it is. There it is. I'm pretty confident you could get into pretty much any college you want, but you got to apply, and then you got to be able to pay for it. So our dear friend Joseph Mengele, he doesn't have to worry about paying for it. You know, Mom and Dad have money. It takes a while to get through all this schooling. And he goes in... All the best doctors in the world would go to Germany to study. American doctors went to Germany. Everybody went to Germany. They were considered top end in the world in the medical field at the time.
Okay.
And that is also, unfortunately, why this idea of, you know, racial eugenics, this idea that we can figure out the differences in races and measure things and connect what's hereditary and what's not and categorize races, that all kind of gets spread around the world because it's going on with not just the Nazi movement, but that was already kind of taking hold, and Germany was a center of that. And then everybody from all over Europe and America is coming to go to school there, so they're learning a little bit about this. So when we get to some of these experimentations that not just Mengele does, but other doctors do within the Nazi regime, it's not considered way out there. It's just a few steps beyond what is mainstream scientific thought at the time in that area of the world. So a little context there.
Okay.
It's going to seem super weird when we talk about some of this stuff today. It was just a little weird back then.
Gotcha.
Okay. So he's going to do all that. And because he wants to study anthropology, which is a lot about groups of people, their group history, how different races and people develop into the societies of the past, how it affects the future. That is a perfect place to be if you're a Nazi, right?
Yeah, Yeah, that makes sense.
Like, you're trying to figure out, hey, we're going to be these Aryans, and we're better than everybody, and we want to purify our nation. Man, if you're in anthropology, that's a gold star place to be, because that's kind of what they're trying to do in an applied sense. And then,
all right, I follow you.
With medicine, it's the same thing. We're going to do all this stuff and talk about medicine, not only with genetic medicine and studying heredity and all of that, but we're going to apply this theory of the nation is the patient, and we're going to, you know, take out the cancers or the viruses or the, those are all secret words for let's kill the Jews, by the way, which is terrible. So he's got these two areas of specialty, of special knowledge and, you know, degrees that he can prove that are both gold star if you're trying to be an up-and-coming Nazi, you know? Mm-hmm. What a great piece of timing for him. Now, it's curious to wonder, did he choose these fields of study because those were the hot topics of the time? Or did he really want to study those and it just happened to be the perfect confluence of time and place where that would do him the most personal good? I don't know the answer to that. It seems like in some of the literature I've read, I'm not the only one who thinks this, but it seems like probably if the Nazis had been more into something else, that maybe he would have studied that because he just wanted to be thought of as cutting edge and intelligent and be respected. So if those two areas weren't the Nazis' thing, wasn't their focus, maybe he would have picked something else. Maybe he would have built bridges. I don't know.
Well, so what, like, what's the time frame on all this? When like World War II starts, is that after he's already out of school? Is it when he's starting to do his schooling? What's the time context?
Okay, well, he's in college for a bunch of years, right? Because if you're going to learn to be a doctor, take some time. So he finishes all of this stuff just kind of as the war is starting, towards the beginning of the war.
Okay, so
he comes out right in a perfect time.
He's up and coming as all everything, you know, as all of the Nazis are up and coming as well.
And the Nazi movement, you know, Hitler comes to power in, when's he coming to power? 37 or 33. I should really know this one, right?
But really should know this.
We're talking mid 30s that this movement really starts to take force, and then Hitler has power, and then it takes several years for him to really consolidate that power and get the Nazi fingers into everything. So Mengele is going to school while all those things are going on.
Okay.
And some of those things that are going on will indirectly affect him, right? Like if the some of the very top thinkers, educators, doctors, anthropologists, they're Jewish. So where are they going as the Nazis come to power?
Concentration camps?
No. None of that happens until the war starts. They don't start by killing Jews. But what do they start doing with the Jews very early on?
I don't know. What do they do?
See, this is what I like about this show is I just see what, if you don't know, then other people might not too. So they start persecuting the Jews very early on. And one of the earliest ways they do it is they pass laws that Jewish people cannot be professors at the universities, cannot hold certain jobs like doctors or scientists. And so a lot of the brain trust, and it's not like a huge majority, okay, because the number of Jews within Germany as a proportion, you know, it's a sizable gross number, but it's not like 90% or 50% of the population is Jewish. So they get forced out. And that has a double impact. It takes away some of your national knowledge and expertise, right? But it also provides all these openings. Because, hey, last year, before all these Nazi policies, there was only 20 or 25 jobs that a guy with these kind of degrees could really apply for. But this year, everybody who had one of those jobs and was Jewish is gone. So now there's 200 openings.
Yeah.
So again, it's another, I mean, if he wanted to be successful, I mean, if he went out of his way to pick this field, he picked perfect.
Yeah.
And if he didn't pick it with this kind of, you know, foresight in mind, then, man, he's got the best luck in history, which is going to be really unfortunate because we're headed for the bad stuff.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to Season 2 of History on the Dark Side. If you're enjoying this season, I highly recommend the following book, The Nazi Doctors by Robert J. Lifton. Not only is it valuable source material, but this is the definitive book on this subject matter. As far as documentaries go, I highly recommend Auschwitz, The Nazis and the Final Solution by the BBC. I don't think there's a better documentary about The Final Solution. I'd like to recommend iCivics. Now, this doesn't have much to do with the Nazis, but if you are a history teacher like myself, or you have a history class, or you're just interested in anything to do with American government or American history, there's a lot of materials at iCivics.com that you can use. And I also want to recommend the Anchor app. If you need to distribute or make a podcast, they make it pretty simple. Special thanks to a lot of people who helped this show happen. I'd like to thank my cohorts at Eagle Rock Middle School, Jeff and Brett. They listen to me go on and on about what I'm trying to do and help kind of guide my thoughts. I give a lot of thanks to my family. Not only do I have the kids that come up and guest host, they also do some work in the background as far as some of the engineering and helping out with the parody commercials. I suppose if you're listening to this now, you already know how to find the program, but feel free to recommend it to any of your friends that might like it as well. It's available on iHeartRadio, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, Spotify, iTunes. So just about anywhere you can find a podcast, you should be able to find The Dark Side. I have recently started a YouTube channel for History on the Dark Side. So if it's easier for you to watch or to listen to the audio on YouTube, you can find me there. And currently under construction, I have a website, historyonthedarkside.com, so hopefully sometime before the end of Season 2, that is up and running. Thank you once again. I'm so grateful for anybody who takes the time to listen to this, and I will see you next time on The Dark Side.